They come from the past and the future.
There is nothing wrong with your radio.
Listen.
With the single most important interview since God talked to Moses.
The voices you are hearing are the voices from Krypton.
I'm Ed Gross, this is Voices from Krypton, and we have it on good authority that ghosts are real. That authority is represented by no less than Guillermo del Toro, whose latest film is Crimson Peak, a 19th century ghost story set in a crumbling mansion in rural England. There, Sir Thomas Sharp, aided by his sister, Lady Lucille Sharp, begins to play out a game of manipulation with his new bride, Edith Cushing, the results of which, and not for the first time, have deadly consequences. I recently had a brief sit-down with Guillermo in which we discussed his approach to filmmaking, his creative influences, and his passion for Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. But beware of Crimson Peak spoilers.
How much do you love playing with the sounds and everything and orchestrating the sounds in the sense of I'm sitting in this theater and I'm hearing a drip and I'm hearing a creak and I'm hearing the wind. And I just don't know if that's you, if that's your sound people. That is you. I mean, so you really like... Yeah. See the entire thing then.
Yeah. I mean, we mixed this movie. We had full, complete mixes, about three complete mixes. Okay. And I kept tweaking it and tweaking it and tweaking it. And we redesigned the sound design about three times. I hired two sound designers at the end with their entire teams. I recorded the music 12 times.
Really?
Yeah. And I discarded about 30% of the score, and remixed it without score. And I mean, it's an aspect. I can tell you exactly what is happening on the channels as we watch it, you know. And I can tell you what elements we're using. If you tell me what is this sound, I can tell you the sound. I can tell you that we use, for example, a baby cooing and crying for one of the ghosts. I can tell you that we used pork rinds to use the sound of the knife going into the cheek.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting. Okay.
Et cetera.
Yeah.
I mean, we can really talk for hours about it, and the same goes to the visual design of the film. I think that if you don't oversee every aspect of filmmaking, you know, as far as I'm concerned, you're not directing, you know?
But in your mind can go to all those different areas and keep track of. That's amazing. Yes, seriously. Yes. That's.
I don't know if it's amazing, but it's obsessive.
It's impressive. It's obsessive. Yeah. It's impressive. I'll go with impressive. It sounds much better than obsessive.
No, thank you. But my wife says obsessive.
Okay, there you go. Fair enough. It's funny because one of the things I thought you did was a nice twist is the way the movie was set up. I thought really by the end of the movie, those ghosts were going to get up and basically take care of
Edith.
Thank you. Oh, my God. I can't believe I forgot her name. I'm sorry. And yet the it was the opposite. Really, her taking care of them freed the ghosts in a lot of ways.
What I wanted to do very much is, and for a while there was a version of the screenplay where that happened.
With the ghosts.
Where the ghost appeared at the end. And I felt that was too symmetrical. That was too tit for tat. Mm. And I thought, I'm going to have one ghost show up at the end that really matters to Lucille. And I'd rather have that ghost alone than see everyone. And I think it works better for me.
Oh, yeah. No, it definitely works. You know, you have these things you love. But is this the particular passion, this type of gothic story, is this really the thing that gets you going creatively in general?
I think that this is one of my three favorite movies I've ever done. I think, without a doubt, for me, is the most beautiful movie I've ever done. I think in terms of fabrication and craftsmanship, is the most polished movie I've ever done. And I do think that I could live in this world and this period and this type of movie for the rest of my life.
Really?
Without a problem, yeah. But that said, if I'm invited to revisit Hellboy, or I'm invited to revisit Pacific Rim, I'll go gladly, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I was joking with somebody the other day, they came to visit me at the house and my man cave, and you know, it's two houses of collection, separate from the family home, with secret passages and, secret doors.
Of course it is.
Behind paintings and stuff like that. And they were looking at every room, and I said, this is the Robot and Kaiju room. This is the Victorian room. This is the steampunk room. This is the Jack Kirby room. And they said, well, every movie you've ever done is here. I go, and every movie I'll ever do.
Every influence you mean is there, right.
Yeah, every time I make a movie, I'm articulating a side of my personality that is very important for me.
Fair enough. Yeah. Making Crimson Peak, what does it have an influence on you? And this, I mean, earlier you said you could live in this era forever, you know, in there. Are you actively trying to find another project that can keep you here, in a sense?
Well, one day I'll do my Frankenstein, right? One day I will. And my Frankenstein is period. So, you know, one day I hope to tackle it. I hope to tackle Mountains of Madness, which is later, a little later, you know, but not by much. It's a couple of decades later.
Right. Frankenstein, though, is that something that you're not ready for, or people aren't ready to let you do it?
No, I think I'm sort of daunted by the fact that it's my favorite book. Okay. Ever written, you know? I think that I'm very daunted by that. I don't wanna screw it up, you know? And I wish I was less of a chicken shit and got to write it, you know?
Can I ask why that's your favorite book of all? I mean, what is it about?
When I read it, I had already seen the movies and loved Boris Karloff and all that. And then I was, I don't know, 11 or 13, I don't remember. Probably 11. And I picked up the book, and I read it, and I thought, "Dear Lord, no one has made this movie.
Mm-hmm.
This is such a powerful story, and no one has made it."
You mean an accurate version of
an accurate version of the book? I mean, because the closest it's ever gotten is Frank Darabont's screenplay that got discarded for the Kenneth Branagh version, you know. But and curiously enough, another version that comes close to the spirit, even although it's completely different than the book, is Frankenstein, the True Story.
Just thinking of that one. You know? That's the TV thing.
The TV thing that combines E.T.A. Hoffman with Mary Shelley, with the Dame Polidori who created the vampire. I mean, it's a mishmash of Gothic, but it actually is very, very beautiful. Beautiful. Mm. It was written, what's his name? Same guy that wrote Cabaret and Isherwood. Okay. Christopher Isherwood. Brilliant writer. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What is it about ghosts that you think that the whole notion of ghosts has a powerful hold on us? Is it just because we miss these people, or is it something more?
I have experienced two ghost experiences.
You have?
Yes. So I know they're real. I'm not at all in doubt. I happen to think that the whole psychic phenomena, I don't believe in.
That's the whole idea of psychics.
The whole idea of psychics, I don't believe. I think it's called reading. I'm a skeptic.
Yeah.
But I do believe in ghosts. I think that one day, 20 years from now, somebody will say, oh, it was this. And there will be a perfectly boring explanation for it.
Mm-hmm.
But in the meantime, I can tell you they're real. And the only three things that have happened to me in my life that are weird is one UFO encounters and two ghosts.
Really?
Yeah. And they were... But other than that, I'm a skeptic. It's funny enough.
How are you a skeptic, though, when you've seen these things?
I've seen them, but everything else needs to be demonstrated.
You have to actually see it for yourself.
Yeah,
to
if you tell me PSI or, you know, you tell me psychic telekinesis, you need to demonstrate it. I don't automatically believe in any of that stuff. I can believe in the things I've seen or heard in the case of the ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
But the UFO, I saw it as clearly as I see that building.
Uh-oh.
And at the same distance, by the way.
Right. That's amazing.
Yeah.
You know. What fuels the creative vision for you? Is it just your background and all the things you love, or is there other things going on in your mind? I mean, I don't even know if that's a clear enough question, but I just try to get an idea of where all this crap comes from.
Well, you know? I think as you grow, your concerns grow with you, but you're still in the zone. I mean, like, I read between the ages of 7 and 17. I basically read at least a book every day. Right. That's thousands of books. And those stay with you. I keep reading. I read a book a week. Now I'm very slow, or maybe two sometimes. But they stay with you, and then you spend the rest of your life trying to make sense of those emotions. And I think In my case, I do it through fable or strange stories, you know. Right. Like having kids made me do Pan's Labyrinth. Having kids that I admire that are very strong females made me want to do the character of Edith. You know, so it's things that happen in your life, you know.
It's the mix of it all, basically.
Yeah, it is. Right? I mean, look, I've never done a movie that I don't fully believe in.
Yeah.
I've never done a movie that I'm not prepared to, like, even have a heart attack for. I don't care. I haven't yet.
Good.
I'm not saying I won't. Life changes.
Exactly.
Thanks for listening to Voices from Krypton. I'm Ed Gross, and I'm getting out of here while I still can.
Voices from Krypton.